Twitchell's Book 1, Dwindling Magic. Written and read by T.D.L. White. Chapter 9, Monkey Business. With the library network connection unreachable behind a locked door, Nick decided on another angle. He unfolded his map and checked the quickest way to the RIs, the posh kids' dorms, and set off at a pace. In completely the wrong direction, which he realised after only a couple of steps and spun round to correct himself. There was a flash of yellow movement high up near the ceiling at the far end of the corridor. He stopped in his tracks and stared at where the yellow blur had been. Nothing moved. Nick rubbed his eyes and set off again. When he reached the end of the corridor, he paused, looked up, and saw nothing but the regular old ceiling and the suspended lighting panels. A panel might have malfunctioned. Maybe they were the sort that could change colour for different lighting moods. Maybe. No time to worry about that now. Taking a right past science, he was moving away from the house, and toward part of the school that he hadn't been before. A set of double doors took him out of the college and into the cool September air. The sky above was dark and starless, with a dimming blue-grey patch hanging low above the forest to the west. A wide gravel path cut a straight line in the darkness, lit by a series of knee-high lampposts. Nick avoided the path and made his way across a neatly trimmed lawn. A few minutes later, shoes now soaked by dew, he found himself treading slowly through the tall grass that grew between a patch of darkened trees. He used his phone to light the way through until he could see the brick wall of what the map had promised was one of the exclusive dorms. Whatever Jenny and James had said about the rules being the same everywhere, Nick could not believe that hundreds of rich kids put up with a single hour of Wi-Fi a day. Getting as close as he could to the building, while staying within the protective cover of the trees, he used his phone to check for Wi-Fi signals. He paused in the darkness under a birch tree about 4 meters from the brick wall. The grass, along with a few small shrubs, continued past the tree, finishing in a neat line bordering a gravel path that ran around the perimeter of the building. He was definitely close enough for a decent signal. His phone showed about a dozen different wireless networks. Nick wasn't surprised. Most students' mobile phones could double as Wi-Fi hotspots. But that didn't mean they had internet connectivity. He scrolled through the details of each network, hoping for something a little more interesting than Ali's iPhone. Bingo. One of the networks was called KSatNet_5G. Even with no mobile phone towers nearby, wherever you were in the world, it was always possible to get internet via satellites. And it wasn't even that expensive these days. Easily affordable for a Twitchell student with a big allowance. Nick tried to connect to the network with his phone. It asked for a password. Nick smiled. Whoever was using KSatNet_5G had added some security. That meant it was even more likely it was a decent connection. No point protecting something unless it was worth protecting. Nick couldn't hack into the network with just his phone, so he stepped behind the narrow trunk of the birch tree and swung his bag around. A light rustling came from above him. He froze and looked up into the branches. It was impossible to make anything out in the darkness. Must have been the wind, or a bird or a squirrel. Either way, he ignored it and took his laptop out, cracked open the lid, and lowered the screen brightness with a keyboard shortcut. Even on the dimmest setting, the screen cast a ghostly glow over his gown. Keeping the laptop half closed and operating mostly by touch, he started up an application called Brutifier. Brutifier's only purpose was guessing passwords. Nick had it configured to use a custom list of about 100,000 common passwords that it would cycle through in a matter of minutes. At the top of the list were the easy passwords, things like password123 and QWERTYIUP. If someone had been lazy when setting up the security, Brutifier would beat it in seconds. He opened his laptop's Wi-Fi connection service and connected to the KSATnet_5G network. Then he set Brutifier to work. 5 seconds later, there was no success message, and Nick knew that the password wasn't one of the simple ones at the top of his list. Now he'd have to wait until it cycled through tens of thousands more guesses. The night had set in, and it was definitely not summer anymore. For once, Nick was glad of the gown, pulling it tight around him like a blanket. He was about to check on Brutifier to see how it was getting on, when a movement on the gravel path in front of the tree caught his eye. A small blur, about the size of a cat, flashed across the ground near the building, hardly making any sound at all. Almost immediately, the exterior lights flickered into action, their motion sensors stirred from stasis by whatever had skittered along the path. After minutes of standing in near-total darkness, the lights were blinding, and lit not only the path around the building, but most of the area surrounding Nick. He was totally exposed in a little clearing, behind a tree trunk that was only as wide as his leg. A crunching sound, careful footsteps on gravel, came from the same direction that the blur had appeared. If whoever was walking kept going, it would not be long until he was right in their view. Nick had the chance to leave without being found. He could disappear back into the trees and be back in the college in minutes. But that would mean no shopping for his granddad until Sunday at the earliest. And Brutifier didn't have long to go, just a minute or two. With the poor judgment that comes when surprised by approaching footsteps on gravel at night, Nick made a snap decision. He took his gown off, wrapped it carefully around his half-closed laptop, and left the bundle in the grassy darkness at the bottom of the tree. Then he crept back into the patch of trees and hid behind a big bush. From his now rather better hiding place, he could barely make out the shadowy shape of his gown at the base of the birch tree. His school jacket and trousers were both very dark. He was confident that neither he nor the laptop would be spotted by whoever had decided to take a nighttime stroll. He'd let them go past and then go and check on Brutifier's progress. Unfortunately for Nick, this wasn't a regular nighttime stroll. He realized his mistake too late, when two boys walked into view and stopped on the path right opposite the tree.
"I thought you said the lights wouldn't come on."
It was the man-boy, Kolya, his Russian accent giving him away as much as his giant frame. He was dressed in jeans and a hoodie, holding a phone in one hand.
"You must have moved too fast. I've never set the lights off before. Maybe it's because of this big old thing."
The other boy was much shorter than Kolya, but that didn't mean he wasn't huge. His neck was as thick as his head, and his shoulders were even wider than the man-boy's. He was English, and sounded like he belonged in the rich and privileged dorms. Only he spoke like he had a cold, and his nose was blocked. He was carrying something wrapped in a Twitchell's gown. It was as large as a big computer monitor box, and awkward and heavy to carry. He hoisted it up to adjust his grip.
"Shouldn't we take it inside first?" Wide Boy said.
"No, this won't take long. I know he's around here somewhere. Let me check."
Kolya looked at his phone and furrowed his pronounced brow.
"This thing's not updated yet. He was right here. He must have moved. And maybe he saw us, maybe he didn't. It matters not."
He looked over, right toward the bush where Nick was hiding.
"Hey," he raised his voice, "new boy. You want to come out and have a chat? Or do we have to flush you out like a rat?"
Nick edged back quietly, away from the other boys, treading as softly as he could. He had about 20 meters of wooded area behind him. He could hide deeper in, or maybe make his way out, head back to the college, then come back later to pick up his laptop. He'd made it to a dense conifer before Collier started moving his way. With the darkness and the trees, it shouldn't be too hard to sneak out the way he'd come. Then he heard a sound from behind him, followed by an angry voice.
"Ow!" the voice said, before quietly adding, "Something scratched my ear."
"Shh!" another voice said in a gruff whisper. Then it added, "Probably a bat or something. Just keep quiet and listen. Collier and Hector should be herding him this way." The voices weren't far off. They were definitely somewhere inside the patch of trees between him and the lawn outside the college. He was trapped. How had they known where he was? Nick let out a silent sigh as it dawned on him. Collier must have access to the SS-Tag geolocator data. He knew exactly where Nick was because he was probably looking at a yellow dot with N. Thompson written above it. This gave Nick an idea for a way to escape. If Collier was tracking the badges, all Nick had to do was put some distance between himself and his badge. He took it out of his jacket, intending to hurl it as far as he could. He would have to deal with the wrath of the caretaker, but that was preferable to being caught by Collier and his cronies. While he was deciding on the best direction to throw his ID badge, Nick felt a light tap on his shoulder. Spinning round, he had to swallow a scream of terror, as right at eye level was a small, jet-black face with an angry-looking mouth. And it was staring right at him. The face was upside down and belonged to a creature dangling by its feet from a branch of the conifer. It had light-coloured fur, at least lighter than its face, and when it cocked its head to one side, Nick realised it wasn't angry. It was actually smiling. He was looking into the smiling face of a happy monkey. A monkey with a pair of black, beady eyes and a shiny, squashed nose that looked like they belonged to... "Cece?" he whispered, not truly believing that the little dog had turned into the monkey swaying gently before him. The monkey nodded and held out a small black hand, one finger unfurled, pointing at the ID badge Nick was about to throw. Without thinking, he handed the badge to Cece, or at least this monkey version of Cece, and watched in disbelief as she dropped lightly to the ground and silently scampered away, ID badge clutched firmly in one hand. Not out of the woods quite yet, Nick crouched low and shuffled backwards into the prickly safety of the conifer and waited. It did not take long for the two sets of pursuers to converge nearby.
"Did you see him?" Collier's voice was close.
Nick could just make out a dark silhouette through the thick, spiny branches of the tree.
"No, he didn't come this way. He must have slipped by you,"
the bat-bitten voice said.
"No way,"
Thickneck, Hector, said.
"You missed him."
"I bet he's hiding somewhere," the fourth voice said.
"Wait, let me see if this has updated," Collier said,
his face suddenly lit up by the phone light.
"We all missed him. He's round the side of the dorm in the courtyard. There's only two ways out. If we split up again, he'll be trapped."
"This better not take much longer," Batbite said. "It's lights out in 10 minutes.
"Lights out when I say lights out," Collier said. "We can't have this stupid scholar spying on us. He needs to know his place. No need for stealth this time. He can't escape. Let's go."
They moved off quickly, crashing through the undergrowth toward wherever Cece had taken Nick's ID badge. He waited a full minute, counting slowly to 60, before retracing his steps and collecting his gown and laptop from the base of the tree. He was halfway back to the college before the problem of getting back into the school building crossed his mind. Luckily, Cece got him out of that fix too, scurrying down from a nearby roof right as he reached the closest door. In the light of the college, the monkey's fur shimmered gold, and its face made sense now. What was a hideously ugly dog was a fine-looking primate. Cece sprang lightly onto Nick's shoulder and deftly slotted his ID badge into his jacket pocket. "Thanks," Nick said. "I guess at least you didn't believe that I was spying for the inspector." Cece gave him a gentle pat on the head. There was no sign of Collier or the others, and Nick half thought about giving the ID badge back to Cece so she could keep the idiots running around on a wild goose chase. Well, more of a tame monkey chase. But he'd already pushed his luck and didn't want to give Collier any more chances to catch up with him. Inside, Cece tugged at Nick's gown, which he still had bundled up around his laptop. He couldn't work out what the monkey wanted, but eventually stopped to put the laptop away and put the gown on. At which point, Cece folded herself into it, leaving just her face poking out. "Ah," Nick said, cradling her in his arm. "No reason for anyone else to know that you're not a dog." The yellow fur of the monkey was much softer than the mottled grey-brown stuff the dog wore. Nick hugged her close as they walked. In need of another cup of tea, he went straight to the common room in the house. To his disappointment, the drinks and snacks had been cleared away. And worse, James, Jenny and Elf were sitting on armchairs around the fireplace. Cece wriggled free from Nick's gown and bounded across the backs of two chairs onto Elf's lap. Being a monkey suited Cece far better than being a stiff-legged dog.
"Cece," the girl said, "I wondered where you'd got to."
Nick turned to leave. "Wait," Jenny said, "I think we need to talk." "I don't know anything about your book," Nick said flatly.
"This isn't about the book," Jenny said. "We might be able to help each other."
"Well, I don't need anything from you," Nick said, opening the door to the hallway. "So there's no point chatting."
"What about an internet connection," James said, "that's available for longer than 1 hour a day?"
Nick thought about his granddad's shopping. He kept his hand on the door handle. "You said there weren't any other networks at Twitchell's. How can you help me get internet access here?"
Nick eyed the other boy suspiciously. James shrugged. "We're not talking about the Wi-Fi at Twitchell's," Jenny said. "Look, you already know one of our secrets," she nodded at Cece, "and you seem to have found out about another of them, about Brighton somehow. It's almost lights out. Talk to us for a minute, and then you can choose what to do next. Worst case scenario, you go to bed after, survive till Friday, and then go home."
Nick wasn't convinced. Chatting in the warm, however, was marginally better than going back outside to search for Wi-Fi while standing under a tree in the dark. And much better than being hunted by Collier. And anyway, he needed to kill some time to make sure that Collier and the others had given up looking for him. He closed the door. Whatever they were going to talk about, it couldn't get much weirder than finding out that Cece was a monkey. But Nick was wrong. It got much, much weirder. This podcast was brought to you by me, T.D.L. White. I'll be reading a chapter a week until it's complete.